The Anger of Achilles. The BBC presents an epic for radio in three parts by Robert Graves. The Anger of Achilles, Part 1.
2,600 years ago, in a royal courtyard in Greece, an audience relaxing with wine cups at their elbows, sat waiting for one of Homer's storytelling sons.
Welcome, Phemias, son of glorious Homer. Welcome to my city. You have made a pleasant voyage from sacred Delos.
With the god Apollo's own blessing, my lord, and that of Poseidon, ruler of the sea.
Phemias, we are assembled here in this courtyard in joyful hope of entertainment. It is now many months since one of your illustrious guild of storytellers has so favored us. Come, fill these agate cups to the brim. Your health, son of blind Homer, whom the muse gifted with inward sight.
And Apollo's blessing on this hospitable city.
Oh, look at his lion! It's made from a turtle shell.
Hush, daughter.
Pray silence, lords and ladies, freemen, children, slaves. Honor Apollo and his servant, the bard, Phemias.
Now tell me, Phemias, what shall our tale be tonight?
By your royal leave, I shall sing The Anger of Achilles.
The Anger of Achilles?
This is a story of the long Greek war against Troy, fought 600 years ago, when Prince Paris of Troy, prompted by the love goddess Aphrodite, had stolen Menelaus's wife, Queen Helen of Sparta, and Priam, king of Troy, had refused to send her back. This is a story of the 10th year of that siege and tells how the young Prince Achilles, who has brought his Myrmidons to fight with the Greeks against the Trojans, now at last quarrels with the High King Agamemnon of Mycenae, the Greek commander-in-chief.
What? Quarrel with his own liege lord?
By your leave, Achilles was King Agamemnon's ally, not his vassal. And even the Olympian gods were involved in that fearful quarrel, as you shall hear, for I will now explain all. With the muse's help. Sing, mountain goddess, sing through me that anger which most ruinously inflamed Achilles, Peleus' son, and which before the tale was done had glutted hell with champions, bold, stern spirits by the thousandfold, ravens and dogs their corpses ate. For thus did Zeus, who watched their fate, see his resolve, first taken when proud Agamemnon, king of men, an insult on Achilles cast, come to accomplishment at last. If you want to know which of the gods kindled this quarrel and how he did so, I can tell you. It was Phoebus Apollo when he sent a fearful pestilence among the Greeks by way of punishing King Agamemnon. The trouble began with Agamemnon's scorn of Apollo's priest, Chryses, who came to the Greek camp before Troy, armed with the god's sacred woolen headband bound on a golden wand. Apollo's priest was offering a high ransom for his daughter, Chryses, whom the Greeks held as a prisoner of war. Chryses addressed the entire army, but particularly the High King Agamemnon and his brother, King Menelaus of Sparta, on whose account, you remember, the war was being fought.
Royal sons of Atreus, Agamemnon and Menelaus, and you other distinguished warriors, it is my sincere hope that the blessed gods will permit you to sack King Priam's citadel yonder in Troy and to sail safe home. But only if you honor Zeus's son, Apollo, the god whom I serve, by setting my daughter, Chrysias, free.
Let the girl go home untouched in her father's company.
No! By your high king, Agamemnon, say no!
Let me catch you here again, old man, among these ships of war, either now or later. And neither that wand nor your priestly headband will protect you. Understand me once and for all. I will never release your daughter, Chrysias.
My lord.
She must spend the rest of her life as my royal concubine. First here, and then the distant Mycenae. Begone, and not another word!
The venerable Chrysias, scared into obedience, walked silently away beside the rough sea until he found himself alone. Then, weeping, he offered this prayer to Apollo.
God with the bow of silver, you that take your stand at Chrysa and holy Scylla, protector of our land, great lord of mice, whose scepter holds Tenedos in fee, listen to my petition. Consider well my plea. If ever I built a temple agreeable to your eyes, or cut from goats or bullocks the fat about their thighs, to burn as a costly offering at King Apollo's shrine, let the Greeks pay with your arrows these burning tears of mine.
Apollo heard Chrysa's prayer, and his face grew darker than night. Shouldering the silver bow, he hurried down from Mount Olympus, where the blessed gods live. His arrows of pestilence rattled in their quiver as he alighted at some distance from the ships, and his silver bow clanged dreadfully when he let fly. Apollo's first victims were mules and hounds. Next, he shot their masters, whose pyres were presently seen burning from end to end of the camp. For 9 days, these unseen arrows riddled the Greeks. And on the 10th, Prince Achilles, inspired by the goddess Hera, who hated Troy and felt compassion for its dying besiegers, summoned a general assembly, as was his right.
My greetings to you, dear brother Menelaus.
Brother.
And to you, my staunch ally, great Idomeneus of Crete.
Agamemnon.
And to you, wise and venerable Nestor of Pylos.
Great.
And to you, bold Diomedes. And to you, resourceful Odysseus of Ithaca.
Well, Agamemnon.
And to you also, Achilles, leader of the Myrmidons.
Greetings, high king.
And lastly to you, Calchas, who claim inspiration from your master, Phoebus Apollo.
Greetings, my lord.
Tell Phoebus my herald will hand his white gold-studded staff to whichever lord has a mind to give us counsel. Let no man speak without it.
Who summoned this assembly?
It was I, Achilles, prince of Thea, son of King Peleus and the sea goddess Thetis.
Take the wand.
King Agamemnon, son of Atreus, of one thing I am certain. We are fated to be driven from our camp by this combination of pestilence with war, unless we at once consult some prophet or priest or even an interpreter of dreams.
Dreams?
Dreams, too, are sent by Zeus. We must find out the reason for Apollo's anger. Mm. Have we perhaps failed to keep a vow? Or to offer him a worthy sacrifice? If so, the odor of prime lambs and goats roasting on his altar should soon placate our lord Apollo, and thus end the pestilence.
Who speaks next?
The staff herald. I am Calchas, the prophet, son of Thestor, servant of Phoebus Apollo himself.
The staff is yours.
Prince Achilles, favorite of Zeus, you invite me to account for the anger of Apollo, the god who kills from afar.
I do.
But since my divine message may displease our commander-in-chief, King Agamemnon, I shall withhold it unless you solemnly swear to protect me afterwards, both in word and deed. Take the staff and answer me, Achilles, my lord.
Calchas, do not shrink from revealing the truth. I swear by Zeus's son Apollo that while I yet live and breathe, no one here will dare lay violent hands on you. Not even the High King Agamemnon himself.
Then I will speak freely. The cause of Apollo's anger is neither the breach of a vow nor the omission of a worthy sacrifice, but the insult offered his priest Chrysias by the High King in declining a ransom for Chrysias. Apollo has avenged this insult on us all, and our punishment is not yet complete. He will rid the camp of pestilence only when we restore Chryseis to her father without demanding ransom from him, and when we burn 100 sacrificial victims at Apollo's shrine on the island of Chryseis. This way lies our sole hope.
Evil-minded prophet, how you love disaster.
My Lord.
You never foretell anything pleasant. Yours is the most improbable story I have ever heard. So, Apollo has punished us Greeks because I prefer to keep Chryseis as my bedfellow rather than accept a ransom. Let me be blunt. I find her far more attractive than my wife Clytemnestra. Alike in face, figure, intelligence, and skill. Nevertheless, since you are Apollo's servant, I am ready to send the girl home, if needs must, rather than watch my entire army melt away. I stipulate only that you princes will at once recompense me for her loss.
What?
It would indeed be disgraceful were I to find myself the sole Greek without a prize of honor. And you can all see how valuable a one I stand to lose.
King Agamemnon, you are the greediest man alive.
What, Achilles?
Why should we princes recompense you for causing this pestilence? Besides, we have no common stock of booty upon which to draw. What we took from captured cities has already been divided. And it would be indecent to withdraw a particular award from any one of us and make it over to you. Send back the girl as Apollo demands. And later, if Zeus lets us sack some other Trojan fortress, we will, perhaps, vote you an even more valuable prize, as for example...
Do not argue with me, Achilles! I refuse to be bullied. So I must surrender Chryseis and expect no compensation, is that it? You, I suppose, are to keep your prize of honor and leave me chafing empty-handed. No, indeed. If this generous counsel offers me some fair substitute, well and good. If not, I will choose my own prize of honor, seizing it with my own hands. Either from you, great Ajax, or from you, Achilles.
Have a care, King.
However, this can be settled later. Meanwhile, let us pick a crew for one of our galleys, put aboard 100 sacrificial victims and my prisoner Chryseis, then appoint someone as captain, someone like yourself, Prince Achilles, who will sail down to Chryse, there placate Apollo the archer, and so...
Shameless schemer! How can any Greek humbly obey your orders? Whether to go on this voyage or stay and fight. I did not join the expedition because the Trojans harmed me. They never took my cattle or horses nor forage through my cornfields in fertile Phthia. Ranges of misty mountains and vast stretches of echoing sea separate my land from this. Though no vassal of yours, I brought my men here as a favor because you asked me to punish the Trojans for the wrong they did your brother Menelaus. And now, dog-faced wretch!
Achilles!
You not only forget how much gratitude I deserve, but threaten to steal the prize with which the Greeks rewarded me. And at what division of booty after the sack of a large city did I ever get a share even approaching yours in value? Though I led the assault in person and returned exhausted to my ship.
Adequate, adequate.
Very well! Since I have no intention of further humiliating myself by this thankless struggle to fill your coffers, I shall sail home to my country of Phthia.
Desert us by all means, Achilles, if that is your pleasure. I shall not stop you. Others will stay who hold me in respect. And of all my counselors, you are the one who I most detest. You, Achilles, with your endless pursuit of quarrels and battles. Go and welcome. Launch your ships. Play the petty king among the myrmidons of Phthia.
Do not tempt me to...
Be as angry as you please. It means nothing to me, but let me warn you here and now that since Apollo insists on robbing me of Chryseis, my own ship and crew shall carry her back to her father, and I shall visit your hut and recoup my loss with your prize of honor, the beautiful Briseis of Lyrnessus. That'll teach you and your rebellious comrades not to dispute with me on equal terms.
Briseis, Agamemnon, you shall die for that.
As Prince
once Achilles drew the sword from its scabbard, the white-armed goddess Hera, who hated Troy and was intent on keeping the Greek leaders united, hurriedly sent her stepdaughter, owl-eyed Athene, to stand behind Achilles and catch him by his yellow hair.
Why are you here, Pallas Athene, standing behind me? Do I alone see your fierce eyes? Have you come to witness King Agamemnon's insolence? Then let me tell you that it has already cost him his life.
Take your hand from that sword hilt, Achilles, and listen to me. I come as a messenger from my stepmother, the white-armed goddess Hera, who loves both you and Agamemnon. You are to warn him sternly what punishment he must expect, but to abstain from violence. For I promise that one day soon your outraged pride shall be solaced with a prize enormously more valuable than this pretty slave. Come, Achilles, prove that you trust us by showing decent restraint.
Daughter of Zeus, I am indeed enraged. But the gods bless obedience and shall have mine.
I have not yet done, Agamemnon. Drunkard with the face of a dog and the heart of a doe.
Now take care, Achilles.
Why do you never arm for a pitched battle at the head of your men? Or join in setting an ambush, as other Greek leaders do? You would rather die than risk a wound. Yet you speak of stealing a prize of honor from a brave man who challenges your pretensions. Such tyranny has left your people spiritless, else you would never dare insult so many of them. But I, at least, will say my say, and confirm it with a solemn oath, which I take here and now upon this white gold-studded staff, which assures me the right of uninterrupted speech. By this dry wand no more to sprout or put green twigs and foliage out, since once the hatchet swinging free cross-chopped it from a mountain tree, then trimmed away both leaves and bark. By this same wand, which men who mark ancient traditions, praised by Zeus, have set to honorable use in ruling their debates, I vow that all you Greeks assembled now before me, mark these words, one day shall miss Achilles in the fray, and long for him, finding your chief incapable, despite all grief, to save from Trojan's murdering sword an army. Then, Agamemnon, lord, your anger inward you shall turn, cursing the folly that dared spurn him who indignantly here speaks, the best and bravest of all Greeks. In token of which oath, I dash this wand to the ground. There, let it lie.
Celtibius, noble herald, hand me now the staff, for I would speak.
The staff is yours, honored Nestor, the High King's chief counselor.
Alas, our whole expedition is gravely threatened by this sorry dispute. How King Priam of Troy and his sons and all Troy would rejoice to hear of a breach between the two champions who always take the lead in planning and fighting. Pray listen to me, both of you, Agamemnon and Achilles, because your combined ages are far from adding up to mine. And because, when long ago I addressed men even nobler than yourselves, they never disregarded my advice. And I advise you, princes, to do the same. My lord Agamemnon, despite the grandeur of your rank, I charge you keep your hands off the girl whom the Greeks awarded Achilles as his prize of honor.
What?
And my lord Achilles, I charge you, respect the scepter-bearing High King, Zeus's representative on Earth.
That weakling!
You are very strong, I know. And your mother is Thetis, the silver-footed sea goddess. But Agamemnon ranks even higher than you. Lastly, my lord king, I beg you as a favor, let your anger cool. We all know that young Prince Achilles is the boldest fighter here, and all the army sees in him the surest bulwark against the hazards of this war.
Now, what you say is true enough, Venerable Nestor, but Achilles wants to be treated as though he were commander-in-chief, high king, and president of the council.
Oh.
An ambition which I think few of this assembly will support. I grant that the gods have made him a sturdy fighter, Have they also sanctioned him to revile me in such impudent words?
Yes! That is exactly what they have done. If I remained silent, everyone here would call me a coward and accuse me of always yielding to your demands.
Trample on whom you please, Agamemnon, but not on Achilles, son of Peleus. For my service is at an end. And though I will use no violence against you or your servants in the matter of Briseis, the prize of honor awarded me and now annulled, yet try touching any other possession of mine, and your royal blood will stain my spear. Oh, I swear!
Yeah. Herald! This assembly is now closed! Prince Achilles has rudely interrupted my speech!
In the name of my master, the god Hermes, pray silence! I declare this assembly closed.
When Achilles, accompanied by his best friend Patroclus, from whom he was never willingly parted even for a day, had walked off towards the line of huts beside his ships, then Agamemnon ordered a fast galley to be launched and sent the girl Chryseis home to her father under the charge of King Odysseus, his choice of captain. And then it was that Agamemnon remembered his threats.
Tell Phoebus, noble herald, you and your colleague go to Achilles' hut and fetch me the lovely Briseis of Lyrnessus. If he offers resistance, I shall go myself and take her by force, which will injure his pride even more.
The two heralds went off most reluctantly along the beach until they came to the Myrmidons' ships. There they saw Achilles brooding on a bench, seated beside his comrade Patroclus. At first, he gave them no sign, so they kept silence, afraid to utter a word.
I guess your errand. Welcome, heralds. Since your task is to convey messages from Zeus and from his royal representative here on Earth, pray step forward and be assured that I blame only the High King, who has ordered you to steal my prisoner, Briseis. Patroclus, fetch the girl from the hut, and let these heralds lead her away. And when the day comes, as come it must, that I am implored to save Agamemnon's army from shameful defeat, I shall call you both to witness before immortals and mortals alike, but especially before that ignoble High King, your master. What patience I have displayed. And if Agamemnon thinks his army can guard this fleet against a Trojan attack, he must be mad as well as evil not to consider the past and foresee the future.
So Patroclus fetched the slim-waisted Briseis, and the heralds led her away to Agamemnon's hut, though she was loath enough to go. Presently, Achilles walked far along the seashore with grief at his heart and sank down on the sand, gazing in tears westward across the endless waves.
Oh, goddess mother, Thetis the silver-footed. Mother, the lifetime of this man is destined to so brief a span that Zeus, who thunders from the skies, owes me at least a worthier prize of glory than is mine today. See, Agamemnon wrests away the captive girl with whom my sword was honored by the Greeks' award to work his evil will upon her. Indeed, Zeus holds me in small honor. And therefore, goddess mother, to you I pray.
I rise from the sullen waves, Achilles, my son. Tell me what ails you, child. Instead of hiding your sorrow, share it with me.
No. Why should I tell you what you know already? But, Mother, as you love me, go to Olympus and plead my case, reminding Zeus of any word or deed of yours that ever pleased him.
Yes, I will visit many-ridged Olympus, and there on the topmost peak will kneel before Zeus the Thunderer, clasping his knees with my left hand and placing my right caressingly beneath his chin. Father Zeus, if ever Thetis assisted you by word or deed, alone among the immortal gods in ministration to your need, fulfill, I beg you, my petition. Honor Achilles, my dear son, for doomed by fate to end his life before its prime has well begun. Now Agamemnon, king of men, has roughly robbed him of his prize, lovely Briseis, by this act dishonoring us in all Greek eyes. If Zeus, wise ruler of Olympus, rebuking such injustice, lends timely support to Trojan arms, my son may hope for full amends. Father Zeus, you keep silence. I beg you either to give me a sure promise confirmed with your divine nod, or else dismiss my petition. Why shrink from offending me? I know well that I am the least esteemed of all immortals.
This is a serious matter, dear Thetis, and bound to cause trouble between Queen Hera and myself, for she has often accused me of partiality to the Trojans.
Oh, Zeus!
Nevertheless, I feel constrained to grant your plea. Come. Take heart, daughter, and observe my divine nod. The surest possible sign, as everyone knows, that this is my true, certain, and irrevocable promise.
So Zeus nodded his dark, immortal brow, shaking his scented locks, and the whole mountain quaked as he did so. Thetis dived straight into the sea, and almighty Zeus returned to his golden palace, where the gods were all seated together, though not in peace. For some of them favored the Trojan side and some the Greeks. And as he entered the hall, the throned Olympians rose in courteous welcome.
I thank you all. But my Queen Hera seems somewhat out of sorts. What ails you now, wife?
Tell me, shifty husband, with which god or goddess have you been plotting? Oh. Am I always to be excluded from these secret conferences? Were you ever kind enough to inform me of your plans before setting them in motion?
You must not hope to be forewarned of all my decisions here. Oh. They're sometimes too complex even for you to grasp.
Husband.
Whenever I choose to disclose any particular plan, no immortal or mortal will hear of it sooner than yourself. So if I go apart to meditate, you must not badger me with questions afterwards.
Oh, revered son of Cronus, what is this? You know that I never badger you, but always leave you to reach your decisions in complete solitude. Today, however, I'm afraid that charming little Thetis, the silver-footed...
What of her?
Why, we saw her crouched, clasping your knees on the mountain top at dawn. Has she not persuaded you to retrieve Achilles' honor? Did she not beg you to let the Greeks suffer a severe defeat in their naval camp? And did you not humor her with your divine nod?
Oh, wife, you never cease imagining things. At all events, your eternal meddlesomeness, from which I have no means of escape, cannot alter my plans. Oh. In fact, the more you meddle, the less I trust you. Oh. I always do exactly as I please, so hold your tongue and learn to obey.
For if once I lay my omnipotent hands on your divine frame, no god in Olympus will dare to intervene.
Oh, I detest my husband from the bottom of my heart. If only I could make him change his mind.
Where is my brother, the smith god? Ah, Hephaestus.
What is it, Ares, god of war?
Pray soothe our mother by any means in your power.
Listen to me, dear mother.
What is it, Hephaestus?
It would be disastrous if you and our father started wrangling about mortal affairs and drew us into the corner.
Oh.
Domestic troubles ruin our delightful banquets. My advice, though a goddess as learned as yourself needs no advice, is leave Father Zeus alone. Otherwise, he's quite capable of knocking us off our thrones with his thunderbolts. Then where should we be?
No, Hephaestus.
Come, look pleasant for our sakes and restore his good humor.
No.
Now accept this cup of sweet nectar. There. Mother, be brave and patient, however badly he treats you. I could not bear to watch him manhandle the mother whom I love so dearly and without the least hope of saving her. It would be madness to forget my last attempt at intervention when Zeus caught me by the foot and hurled me out of that window. All day I flew through the air, landing on Lemnos only at sunset. The crash half killed me. But fortunately, the kind islanders came to my rescue.
And, brother, you have lived like a rotting partridge ever since. Come the nectar. Fill the cups to overflowing, for I am god of war, and I smell slaughter.
Wife, wife, smile tenderly on me again. Tonight, let us mount our golden couch together.
If that is my lord's will.
It is.
So night fell, and the Olympians slept. And Zeus himself mounted the couch which he chooses when he desires the god of sleep to visit him. There he rested, and Hera rested at his side.
Morpheus, god of sleep, come closer. I have an urgent message for you.
At your orders, Earth Shaker.
Send me a dream.
What sort of a dream, Earth Shaker?
A small, cunning, false one.
I happen to have one here with me. A dear little deceiver.
False dream, are you there?
Yes, almighty Zeus.
Fly down to the Greek ships. Seek out King Agamemnon. You'll find him in the big painted hut. And give him this message in my exact words. Hush, I will whisper it to you lest my jealous queen snoring here beside me should overhear. Rouse, rouse your splendid army, and march without delay, in mass against the Trojans. Great Troy is yours today.
I obey.
But first, false dream, you must disguise yourself as Nestor, king of Pylos, whose counsel Agamemnon values more than any man's.
I obey. What? Are you asleep, Agamemnon? A commander-in-chief with so many preoccupations
has no right to snore the whole night through. Here is an urgent message from Father Zeus himself. Rouse, rouse your splendid army and march without delay in mass against the Trojans. Great Troy is yours.
Today.
Nestor? Nestor of Pylos, are you still there?
You've been dreaming, my lord.
Then I must rise at once, for this is our day of victory.
What, my lord?
Bring me my softest, most beautiful tunic, a capacious cloak, elegant sandals for my feet, the baldric and my silver-studded sword, and my imperishable scepter. Telthybius, where is my noble Helen Telthybius?
At your orders, High King.
First, convene an immediate privy council beside King Nestor's ship, and then when the privy council is met, summon the entire army to the assembly ground.
It shall be done, my lord.
summons you to meet at once beside King Nestor's ship. Remember not the Privy Council.
Welcome, my valued councillors. Pray give me your attention. I was sleeping pleasantly last night when someone resembling you, my Lord Nestor, in height and appearance, invaded my dreams. He stood near me. I heard him say, Agamemnon, victorious king, here is an urgent message from Zeus himself. Rouse your splendid army and march without delay in mass against the Trojans. Great Troy is yours today. So saying, the man in my dreams vanished. With your leave, therefore, I am sounding a general call to arms. Already you can hear the army being summoned to our assembly ground. But first, what do you think of my dream, King Nestor?
My lord, princes and counselors, had any other man told us of this vision, we might well have rejected it as false. Since, however, Agamemnon has every claim to be considered the greatest among us, we should, I believe, accept the message as authentic and approve his general call to arms.
Who else wishes to speak? I take your silence for approval. Come to the assembly. But first, attend to me! First, I deem it prudent to test the army's courage. When, therefore, I rise to suggest that we break off the siege and sail home, you, princes, must shout protests from all sides and insist on a vigorous offensive. Is that clear?
Yes.
Quite clear. Then forward to the assembly grounds.
All the councillors followed Nestor out like sheep, and the men-at-arms came surging around them like flights of bees, 1,000 strong, from their caverned precipice. Over flowery meadows throng, some on that side, some on this. And like bees, the Greek contingent streamed from their ships and huts, soon setting the assembly ground in such an uproar as they sat down on benches that the 9 heralds present had great trouble in persuading the more riotous to let the kings make themselves heard. The High King Agamemnon stood up and displayed his imperishable scepter.
Silence! Silence, you Greeks! The High King will address you! Let no man interrupt him!
Comrades! Soldiers of Greece! Devotees of the war god Ares! Hard-hearted Zeus promised me once, in my innocence, even pledging me his famous nod, that I should not return to Mycenae before sacking yonder great city of Troy. This was a cruel deception, it now appears. He intended us to sail home in disgrace after suffering severe losses, or that, at any rate, is my present view. It will be a tale to shame our posterity, how such powerful Greek forces fought so long and so useless a war against far weaker opponents. Let me enlarge on this point. Suppose a solemn armistice were concluded by the two armies. Suppose that the Trojans invited us to enter their gates. And suppose, further, that we Greeks divided into companies of 10, each company engaging one Trojan householder to pour wine for them. Why, even then, I can assure you, there would not be nearly enough wine porous to go round. Such is the proportion between the Trojan strength and ours. But the Trojans have allies in plenty, and it is these who prevent us from sacking Troy. 9 long years have passed. Our ship's timbers are rotten, and the tackle has perished. And though wives and children at home still await our return, we seem no nearer to success than we were at the start. Let us therefore do as I suggest. Now, in the 10th year, let us sail back to our beloved Greece, in despair of ever forcing our way into the wide streets of Troy.
No!
Why those protesters we were ordered?
After 9 long years!
A blessing on King Agamemnon for his mercy!
Glory to all the gods!
The confused noise rose to heaven where white-armed Hera heard it. She turned in alarm to the goddess Athene, with whom she had planned the destruction of Troy. Remember that neither of these goddesses, Hera nor Athene, could ever forgive Prince Paris of Troy for awarding the prize of beauty to Aphrodite, goddess of love, when the three of them competed long years since on Mount Ida.
Athene, daughter of Zeus, what are these cries I hear? Are Agamemnon's men really about to sail home across the horizon? And will King Priam and his Trojans make good their boast of keeping Queen Helen of Sparta?
Helen, whom Aphrodite gave to Prince Paris of Troy in return for denying us the prize of beauty.
Helen, the woman for whose sake so many of these Greeks have died far from their native land.
Helen, the faithless.
It is unthinkable, Athene.
Yes, noble Hera, wife of Zeus, this is a perilous moment. I will descend to earth and prevent the Greeks from launching their ships. King Odysseus of Ithaca, why do you stand here lost in grief while your men are launching their ships? Take command and prevent their departure.
Goddess Athene, I obey.
Send a hand with this galley. Clear her launching track. Grease these rollers. Now knock away the props and into the water she goes. Heave!
My lord, who commands this ship?
I do, King Odysseus.
My lord, it ill becomes you to catch the panic. Sit down, keep calm. Force your crew to do the same. You have foolishly missed the drift of Agamemnon's speech. He was just testing the army's courage, so beware of being charged with rebellion.
Forgive me, King Odysseus. Hey, men, belay there.
Belay up!
Orders countermanded. We stay.
What right of you to push us fellows around? We want to go home, so I will never fall.
Who are you?
I am Thersites, a Thessalian. I'm not under your command, Ithacan.
Sit down, Thersites, and await orders.
Huh?
You count for nothing, either as a soldier or a thinker. All Greeks cannot be kings. It is a bad army in which each man claims freedom of action. We need a united command. Father Zeus, in his inscrutable wisdom, conferred a scepter on Agamemnon, the High King, and with it the right to exact obedience from us all.
And a mighty poor choice Father Zeus made.
Be silent! Get back to the assembly ground!
So it was that the men were hurried back to the assembly ground, and they raised as much noise as when a western wave rolls growling up the reach and thunderously breaks on the long beach. There they took their places again, and everyone sat quiet, except for this same Thersites, who had no control over his tongue and poured forth an endless stream of abuse against his superiors, saying whatever might raise a laugh. Thersites was by far the ugliest man in the Greek army. Bandy-legged, lame, hump-backed, crook-necked, and almost bald.
King Agamemnon, we've surely by now filled your huts with enough bronze vessels and slave girls to satisfy your greed. When a city is sacked, you always get yourself voted the pick of the loot. I dare say you hope to do even better soon by squeezing the father of some Trojan prisoner whom I or my comrades may take for a gold ransom, or shall we capture yet another pretty little concubine to warm your bed? No commander-in-chief has the right to treat his men so meanly. Fools! Rascals! Women! Not men! You should be ashamed of your softness. Go home as you intended.
Hold your tongue, Thersites! Irresponsible windbag. Have I not already warned you once? Nobody here is attacking royal prerogatives. And as the meanest rogue in the whole army, you had better keep a wards of honor out of your nasty talk and show less eagerness to raise the siege. The situation may be obscure. Who can tell yet whether we ought to end this campaign or continue it? But I will not allow you to taunt the High King with accepting what we voted him. Any more nonsense, and I shall strip off your cloak and your tunic and drive you down to the ships, beating your naked buttocks as you run.
Yeah.
My head be taken from his shoulders if I fail to make good this threat. And here's how I shall start.
Spare me, King Odysseus! Spare me! Odysseus may be a clever tactician, but his silencing of that chatterbox is by far the best service he's yet done us.
Indeed.
Depend on it, Thersites will never again presume to slander a divine king.
My lord.
I am greatly indebted to you.
It seems that
Some of these troops have tried to break the oath which we all took on leaving Greece. It was to obey your orders loyally until we had sacked Troy. Now they whimper like orphaned children or their widowed mothers and complain of homesickness. True, this siege is grim enough to sap any man's resolution. When a storm-bound sailor has to stay away from his wife for as little as a month, he grows impatient. And we are already in the 10th year of war. Take courage, comrades. Have patience yet a while. We shall soon see whether Calchas was a true prophet. Doubtless you remember that famous scene as though it were yesterday. Our fleet had gathered at Aulis, laden with trouble for King Priam and his Trojans, and we kings stood beside a spring, offering sacrifices on the altars of the immortals. Suddenly we saw a remarkable portent. A snake with blood-red markings appeared from under the altar and darted towards a nearby plane tree, on the very top branch of which a sparrow had built her nest. Up the trunk glided that ruthless snake and swallowed each of the nestlings in turn, while the distressed mother fluttered overhead, cheeping indignantly. Then the snake seized the hen sparrow by the wing and swallowed her also. As we stared in amazement at this interruption of our solemn sacrifice, Calchas prophesied. What were the words of Calchas?
Why stand you silent, noble Greek, when Zeus the Omniscient, this late sign, this great sign, this famous sign has sent? A snake devours a sparrow whole, likewise her nestlings ate. So shall war swallow 9 whole years, and victory come late. Not till the 10th year shall proud Troy fall from her high estate.
You have heard! Calchas' prophecy is now nearing fulfillment. And I beg you, noble warriors, to battle manfully here until in this 10th year we have sacked Troy!
What a disorganized assembly! That's what I, old Nestor, say. You behave like a crowd of foolish boys without any interest in warfare proper. So far, you have done no more than talk, argue, and waste the entire forenoon in trying to shape a common policy. As though the High King would swerve from his avowed purpose, which is to shepherd us through the hazards of battle. No one should think of going home until he has avenged Paris the Trojan's theft of Queen Helen by himself enjoying the wife of some Trojan enemy. Whoever feels an irresistible desire for home can try launching his ship and be the first to die.
As usual, you have made the best speech of the session, Venerable Nestor. If only the gods would provide 10 counselors as shrewd as yourself. But Zeus has surrounded me with so much fruitless wrangling and quarreling that my mind is never at ease. Although Achilles provoked that violent dispute about his captive, I confess to having lost my temper before he did. Now, men, off to your dinners, and afterwards we shall take up our battle stations. I want all spears sharpened, all shields tested, all horses fed, and all chariots thoroughly gone over in readiness for a day of hard fighting. And if I catch any soldiers skulking among the ships, why, dogs and carrion birds shall have his corpse.
The Greek troops dispersed hurriedly to their lines, kindled fires on the hearths, cooked and ate their dinners, but each first sacrificed to one of the Olympians and implored protection from the coming slaughter. Agamemnon's own victim was a fat 5-year-old bull, and he summoned 6 counselors to assist at the sacrifice, namely Nestor of Pylos, Idomeneus of Crete, Great Ajax and Little Ajax, Diomedes of Argos, and Odysseus of Ithaca. Menelaus came uninvited, guessing how distracted his brother must have been to forget him. These seven princes, then, stood round the victim while Agamemnon prayed to Zeus.
O Zeus, greatest of gods in heaven abiding, with unabated power the storm cloud riding, let not this sun go down nor darkness flout me, till I and these seven kings here grouped about me have fired the many-doored dwelling of Priam, that not one wall may stand so tall as I am, till swords have rent the bright tunic of Hector and ringed him round with dead, Troy's doomed protector.
Almighty Zeus, though accepting Agamemnon's sacrifice, did not grant his plea, but rather made matters worse for him. Dinner over, the twinkling of bronze arms and armor could be seen at a great distance, as when a mountain forest burns, the glow visible miles away to men below. And the Greek soldiers, pouring from their ships and huts into the Scamandrian plain, recalled a flock of migrating birds. Migrating birds of many kinds that altogether swoop upon Asian meadowlands where winds the castor, crane and goose and swan. No single field contents their eye, but with one huge discordant voice hither and thither on they fly and in their splendid plumes rejoice. The plain echoed the tread of beasts and men as the Greeks gathered upon it, eager to pull their enemy to pieces. How numerous they were, too. Like leaves and blossoms bursting out from every lusty tree, like flies of spring that buzz about the farmyard busily when milk pours foaming into pails, to number them no count avails. Their leaders controlled them with the easy authority of goatherds, each minding his own flock on a common pasture. In the center rode King Agamemnon, with a frown worthy of Zeus, a waist worthy of Ares the war god, a breast worthy of Poseidon, god of the sea. He reminded everyone of a bull standing nobly prepared to defend his herd. So heroic and grand, by the grace of heaven, was his appearance. But when Agamemnon sounded the advance, there were no Myrmidons at his command, because Achilles, their leader, was sulking down at the camp, brooding miserably over the abduction of slim-waisted Briseis. And while anger against Agamemnon thus kept Achilles idling in his hut, his Myrmidons, yearning for war cries and the clash of arms, amused themselves along the shore at quoits, javelin throwing, and archery, or wandered through the empty camp, heartily wishing that someone would lead them to war. The Myrmidons' horses stood idle too, munching clover and marsh parsley, and their chariots were all stowed away. My lord king, I am weary. Another night I will sing more sweetly. Go to bed, dear muse. Take your rest. And good night to you all.
That was part one of The Anger of Achilles, an epic for radio by Robert Graves, from his translation of Homer's Iliad. Agamemnon was played by Morris Denham, Achilles by Robert Hardy, Odysseus by John Slater, Nestor by Norman Shelley, and Zeus by Francis de Wolfe. Phemius, son of Homer, a bard, was spoken and sung by Dennis Quilley. The music was specially composed by Roberto Gerard. and production for the BBC was by Raymond Rakes.